On this week's episode, we get angry with 28 Days Later. Would you go camping in a zombie apocalypse? Are all British movies ugly? And is this a horror movie? Find out now. You're listening to 24 Flames Per Second. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to 24 Flames Per Second. It's the podcast that roasts the films we love the most. As always, I'm your host, Robert Spiewak. And this week we are keeping Halloween season rolling, but we're getting angry. We're all infected with rage. Every single one of us, no matter if we're on the panel or not. This week we are starting the long walk to cross the bridge towards Big Ben to 28 Days Later, a movie that's been on our list for a long time since we did All Zombies last year. And so excited to, this is the one, pretty much the one that had the most interest that we omitted last year for whatever reason. But we got it this year, in this year's horror month. So thanks so much for joining us. And as we get closer to Halloween, believe we'll be doing some kind of hot take this month. Depends on what movies come to streaming, really. Yeah, everybody, hopefully if you are part of our Patreon, you're already in on that stuff. If you're not, head over to patreon.com/24flamespod and check all that stuff out. Like a bunch of goodies over there. In addition to this month's hot take. So go and check it out and help support the show. But all that being said, we got some angry zombies ? To talk about this week. So we're gonna get right into it. Starting with the through the tunnel from me this week, the Frank to my gym, Kwesi Phillip.
Hello, hello.
Hi. How's it going?
Pretty good. This movie is either too soon or right on time, because I feel a lot of rage and every day there's something new. But also terrified about pandemics. So hey, it's either on time or
or look at us.
Soon. Hey, look at us. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, very good. Did you watch the movie this
week? I did not. I couldn't. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Is one of those. It's one of those horror movies where I could, you know, pull through and just bring it out. I know this one was gonna freak me out, because I remember watching it when I was in college, and it really, really freaked me out. And I was like, oh my god, this is terrible. Even then, so you know, now I can't imagine what my nightmares would be like if I went through it.
What do you know about?
Well, I think that we're already living in a horror time now, but I thought that it was this movie, especially, I mean, looking at the different viruses that exist in cinema, in kind of the different canons, like the simian flu from Planet of the Apes, Crippen virus from I Am Legend, T virus from Resident Evil, I feel like this one stands out for some reason. I think that they really did a lot, Danny Boyle and the producers, to find something that kind of amplified and felt really human and real in a lot of ways, because the other ones kind of felt out of place. It felt like you were turning into like another beast, but these all felt like humans, really. Like, it felt so too real and not zombie-esque, and more like it felt more visceral because it felt human in a lot of ways. And so amplifying the rage that kind of exists in you already, and then seeing it come to that extent where it ruins, you know, it ruins economies, it ruins, you know, societies. It's terrifying. Yeah. It's really terrifying.
Hey, it clears up freeways, though.
Hey, you know what? It clears up freeways. Hey, no traffic. It's a trade-off. it's definitely a trade-off. But it adds to the realness, and the same goes to the way they shot it. They shot it on DV. They shot it on these Panasonic camcorders. So it made it feel that much real and not pretty in the way that British people often do with their films and their movies and their TV, because it feels like shows like The Inbetweeners and Peep Show, they use really visceral and not like clear camera work, and it brings the audience in closer and breaks that barrier of this isn't a movie, this is kind of real, and it brings you kind of makes you a little bit more uncomfortable. So I think that's what really enhanced that fear for me, at least, when I was watching 28 Days. Not to mention the fact that during production, apparently two German scientists created a synthetic version of polio using materials available online while they were, and so they found out while they were shooting this thing, apparent horror movie, that there was already something kind of weird going on in the space of disease control, which I feel like is always happening. And thank God we cannot hear about it, because I don't know what we would do. God, can you imagine if you knew what was going on the CDC?
We made polio again.
We made it synthetic. It's not even real.
It can't be killed by natural means.
Look at us. We're science.
We're science. Well, very good. Yeah, that's good stuff. I think we can get on into the panels awesome this panel. Week. Starting with, as always, the Roasters. And first up, we've got Seattle Cinephile. You can find her on Instagram at XanderC33. Alexander Calero.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm starting to think that maybe watching this movie, like today, during a pandemic, was not the best idea. And I didn't know about the synthetic polio, which is now making me terrified.
I'm so sorry.
I'm just going to turn into a hermit. It'll be fine. Clearly, that's how you survive this stuff, right?
Yep.
I was jealous of the clear skies they had in London.
Yep.
But anyways, it's great to have you here this week. And also roasting this week, one of the producers of Seattle's The Moth and a storyteller herself. You can find her on Twitter at Casey Rom. Casey Rom.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Decent. I agree with Alexandra. I think I kind of forgot that this movie was more pandemic than zombie when I agreed to watch it. And so it was definitely an odd feeling to watch while looking out and seeing, like, not the end of the street because we're socked in with smoke and living through a pandemic.
And it's even smokier where you're at, right? Than Seattle.
No, I'm back in Seattle now, but it's bad everywhere.
It's bad everywhere.
It is.
See? It's so loud over here. There's riots in the street. Monster truck riots. Anyways, Casey, it's great to have you here this week.
Thank you.
And on the defense this week, video game journalist and horror expert. You can find her on in social media at SkateyB, Katie Bennett.
Hello.
Hello, how's it going?
It's good. I too did not anticipate the wave of existential panic that watching this in 2020 was going to grant me, but here we are, and I'm excited to really dig into it.
Yes.
Can y'all just not, like, it's a movie. It's not real, all the way real.
It's true. It's not, but it felt, we'll get into it.
It's we'll escape it. Escape our world into theirs. But it's great to have you here on the defense, and you know how this goes. First things first, we gotta do movie in a minute. Give us the full plot synopsis of 28 Days Later, spoilers and all, and we'll give you 60 seconds and a three count. How do you feel? Are you ready?
I think I'm ready, yeah.
Okay. Well, here we go. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Animal rights activists release a bunch of chimpanzees from a laboratory who are infected with the rage virus, which basically turns humans into ravenous zombie-like creatures. Cut to 28 days later, Jim wakes up in the hospital only to discover that all of London is completely abandoned and empty, save for infected humans who quickly attack him. He is rescued by Selena and Mark, who explain to him that the virus has taken over the entire world and basically all of society has collapsed. Mark later gets bit, and Selena kills him, and then Selena and Jim run off and run into Frank and his daughter Hannah, who show them a radio broadcast from the military claiming to have a safe haven at a blockade. They go to the blockade. It's deserted. Frank gets a drop of infected blood in his eye, turns, is killed by soldiers. Soldiers take the rest of them to a mansion that they've turned into a fort, and then reveal that they made up the broadcast just to lure women in to be their sex slaves and repopulate the earth. They try to kill Jim. Jim escapes, and then he releases...
Oh, you're out of time!
No! That's the best one. That's the best one I've done. I practiced for like 30 minutes before we started.
Oh my close. God. So close.
30 minutes. The extra 30 minutes you got, you used to practice.
I did use that to practice. Yeah. And I will say in zero times during my practice did I actually fit everything within a minute. So, but that might have been the closest I've got.
Well done.
It was pretty good. Well, anyways, yeah, Jim does escape without a shirt and without shoes. And he does his darndest to break back in to rescue Selena and Hannah. He does so by letting in zombies with him. And so, yeah, he does successfully break them out. And, you know, there's kind of this, a lot of little touch and go, like, oh, is he infected? Ah! But he's not. And he gets knocked out, right? I forget what happens where he wakes up again later.
He gets shot. They try to escape, right. And the major shoots him.
Yeah, that's right. Anyways, we get that kind of cut to black, and we wake up 28 days later again, and they're doing some farmhouse living, and they're sewing sheets together, and there's jets flying by, and they're trying to get help from said jets with these big sheets of spelling out letters on the hillside. And that's kind of where we're left. A jet does a flyover, and we get, you think they saw us, and then credits roll. And that's 28 days later. And as we know, there's several weeks after that, 28 weeks later, there's another movie. So that's the movie, 28 days later, everybody. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Katie will get your opening statements why you're here defending 28 days later, everybody. And so we will be right back. And we're back, everyone. Welcome back to our 28 days later episode. Katie escaped the mansion, but didn't make it any further as Jim in her movie in a minute. So let's get your opening statements. Katie, what's got you defending 28 days later?
I am defending this movie because I consider 28 Days Later to be one of the scariest and most effective apocalyptic outbreak. You can even call it a zombie movie. I won't be picky about it. One of the most effective ones ever made. Everything from the score, the acting, the cinematography, the makeup effects, it's all a win for me. And I really like how I feel like it really perfectly balances like these incredibly tense and terrifying moments with these really sweet and tender and charming moments. And then they totally rip your heart out and have these horrible, gut-wrenching, very upsetting moments as well. And so I think it just balances it all perfectly. And yeah, I'm a big fan.
Okay. Roasters, I think a great place to start is discussing, you know, the actual genre of this movie. And Alexandra, I know you had a hot take about 28 Days Later, if you want to go first.
Oh, yeah. Hot take, not a horror movie.
Wow.
Evidence number one, I don't watch horror movies. I watch this movie. so I understand the trope of horror movies having zombies, that kind of thing, and it does have that in it. It does touch on something that is particular to the horror movie genre. However, I see it as a survivalist drama that happens to have zombies or a horror movie thing as the cause of the need for survival. And the reason I say that is because so much is focused on how to survive this, whereas it feels like in other horror movies or zombie movies, the focus, yes, is on survival, but there are jump scares. There's this relentless kind of beating you over the head almost with the thing that is the scare factor that I don't think that they do with this, because it's much more of a, like you were saying, a drama with these quiet moments.
Mm-hmm. Katie.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think, I don't know, genres can be really like loosey-goosey and things can kind of overlap and it's hard to kind of fit movies into very specific boxes. So I think while some may consider it horror, and in a lot of ways I do consider it a horror movie, I can totally see the point, like the viewpoint that it's more of a survival kind of like apocalyptic movie. And for me, I don't think that takes away from anything, because it almost makes the really scary moments even scarier, because they're not, as you said, beating us over the head with like, hey, there's zombies, isn't that crazy? So for me, I think the way that they choose to hold back some of their, because really the whole movie could have just been zombie action, zombies killing people killing zombies, bam, 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 bam. But they chose to kind of spread out these moments that are really scary. And I think it's very effective because it almost lulls you into a false sense of security and where you're starting to learn about these characters. And especially during like the road trip scenes when they're on the way to the blockade, you kind of forget you're watching like an outbreak zombie movie. And then that's quickly ripped out from under you. So for me, I don't mind that it might not be a straightforward horror.
Casey.
Yeah, I'm less hung up on whether or not it's a horror movie. I think that zombie or zombie-adjacent infection, whatever movies, often fall into a middle ground of like survival, thriller, and horror. I think what gets me more is that it just leans into this trope of zombie and infected movies where the real evil was the humans all along. And I'm just so tired of that storyline. And especially for a movie that seemed to be praised for kind of like flipping the genre on its head, I find that once they end up at the mansion, it just gets so predictable and annoying.
Yeah, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think a lot of movies like this do like to do that. For me, it's less eye roll inducing in this for me, because it really is like everything about this movie feels so much more visceral and like up close and personal than a lot of other like zombie outbreak type movies, in my opinion. And so I think that's kind of part of like lulling you into the false sense of security, is that, you know, you think maybe this movie's going to be different. Maybe this movie isn't going to be, you know, humans were the real villains all along. And then you, as with many things in this movie, you get that pulled out from under you too. Cause like at this point, not that I'm like super pro, you should just unabashedly trust the military, but I feel like in a situation like this, especially in the year 2000, you know, you run into some military guys, and it's a zombie outbreak. You're like, yeah, cool. Like, these are the guys that are going to know what's up and they're going to save us. And to just be completely let down by that is so gut-wrenching. And it's like, I don't know. To me, I think that's really powerful. Like the notion that even in the worst times, you might not be able to trust the person next to you.
Mm-hmm. Casey?
Well, I think, and Quasi kind of talked about this at the top, that the thing that really sets this movie apart is the way that it's shot. And both of you used the word visceral, but it just didn't really work for me. I think that the cinematography leaves a lot to be desired. And I saw a Letterboxd review that said, why is this movie filmed on a pink Motorola Razr? Like, the quality of it is so bad. And it extends into the sound design where it's so jarring because you can barely hear anybody speak. And then as soon as the music starts, it's like blaring and like trying to break out your eardrums. And so ultimately I found it really hard to just like sit back and enjoy the content because I was so distracted by the editing choices.
Mm-hmm. Alexander.
To kind of piggyback on what Casey was saying. Yeah, the way it's shot, the visceral nature, it feels like a lot of that was thrown in there because they couldn't figure out how to tell the story in a way that made sense for whatever genre they were going for. And therefore, they're like, we'll throw in tons of blood and guts. We'll get real fancy with the camera. We'll make it look like a homemade video because we want to create this feeling of abandonment or terror. And it just distracts from what could have been a very interesting story about how do you survive these kind of times, especially when you wake up and have no idea what's going on. How do you search for resources? Who do you trust? You know, do you trust the military? Do you trust people that you find walking along the streets, because we don't know what kind of anarchy or base human urges or whatever we've all resorted to just to, as an attempt to survive.
Mm-hmm. Katie?
Yeah, so as far as the sound design goes, I don't I don't really have much to come back as far as that goes, because I also experienced similar issues when watching on my TV. So I don't really know if that was intentional or if that was just a goof 'em up, or if it maybe it sounds better like in a theater. So I don't know about that, but I will push back a little about the cinematography. To me, I feel like, so this was the year, what, 2000, right? So
2002.
Okay. So, you know, we're coming out of the late 90s, early 2000s, where a lot of horror movies were really, I like to use the term glossy. Everything was really shiny and high quality and put together. And I think this movie would have just fallen in, like, faded into obscurity had it chose to adopt a similar style. I think it's lo-fi kind of cinematography is what makes it so unique and is what makes some of these scenes even more terrifying to me. Like, there are so many shots that are just, like, stuck in my brain forever, that I don't know if they would have had the same impact had it been on, like, a really high quality, you know, wide lens camera. You know, I'm not sure exactly what cameras were being used in 2002, but, you know, so for me, I think it really adds to, how do I put this? So I think a lot of horror movies, even the scariest horror movies, if they're made really, like, artfully, especially, like, more recent horror movies, like, we're seeing kind of a more artistic cinematography. And I think it's easy to escape the horror of what you're seeing by just losing yourself in the beauty of it, and like, oh, well, it's really scary and it's really upsetting, but it was made so beautifully and the shots are so amazing and I love to look at it. But this movie, you don't even get that relief. You don't even get to escape into, like, a nice scene or a well angled shot. No, you just get in your face, gritty, raw violence and sadness through the whole thing. So I think that really makes it more effective.
Alexandra.
I would disagree on it standing out or not being able to stand out, I should say, if it was glossy looking. A well-made movie will stand out regardless of how it's made. And if it had been glossy looking, maybe it would look like every other horror movie. But if the story is there, it shouldn't matter that it went with a polished look. And I know in some ways that is kind of a pushing back on, well, then it should be fine as the grainy, kind of gritty look to it. But the problem is, you then had scenes that were filmed in dark tunnels, in dark hallways, at night, where you can't really see what's going on because of the camera they used or the techniques they used. And therefore, it's hard to follow what's happening to the characters. It's hard to invest in an outcome for those characters because you can't necessarily see what they're dealing with.
You get into a Battle of Winterfell situation. Where you can't even
exactly see what's going on. What the fuck is going on? Absolutely. It's so dark. Casey.
Yeah, so now I not only have to constantly adjust my sound settings, but my screen resolution and lighting settings as well. yeah, I think kind of to add on to what Alexandra's saying about, like, if the story is there, it shouldn't matter. I think the story is just not there. I want to remember this film for some of the more standout scenes, like the opening and the scene where he wakes up and he, like, walks through the empty London, which is, like, super effective and a great lead-in. And then it just kind of loses the plot for me. Like, I hardly remembered the middle of this movie at all when rewatching it today. I was like, oh yeah, I guess that happened. And the only thing that really stays with you is the ending, where it suddenly turns into, like, a revenge movie. It's just, it's all over the place. And I just wanted to kind of, like, live with this infection a little more and, like, live with this character who just woke up from a coma. Like, it should take a little longer for him to be aware of what's going on around him. And it should take a little more time with some of the more interesting plot points, I think. And instead it's just really jumpy.
Katie?
Yeah, so I totally get that. And I think, so I can only speak to my own personal experience in watching this movie over the years. But, like, for me personally, I did have a similar experience where I kind of completely forgot about the middle of this movie for a really long time, because that, you know, the opening scene with empty London is just so iconic. And I feel like anytime this movie is referenced or talked about in media, they tend to either show that scene or the scenes at the mansion of all of the military guys getting killed by the mailer zombie guy. So I think simply because of that, for me personally, just being reminded of those scenes constantly, but not really being reminded about like the road trip scenes or the horses or them shopping. I think it was easy to kind of forget those things. But when I watched it again this most recent time, I was really taken aback at how more impactful those scenes felt to me now. And it's kind of a shame that I think because of the way maybe it's discussed and because those scenes were just considered to be so iconic that some of those other softer scenes get forgotten. Because to me, I don't find it to be jarring. Like, I feel like I'm totally like on this journey with these people the entire time. And I think all that stuff in the middle makes everything that happens with the soldiers that much more like gut-wrenching and upsetting. Because, you know, we see them go on this, you know, almost like happy little like family road trip. And they have this really amazing scene where they all go shopping and they have a fun time. And then there's this, you know, I love the scene where they see the horses kind of running throughout across the countryside. Like, I just think that's so beautiful and touching. And so to get those moments right before you get one of the most violent and intense sequences that I've seen in a movie in a long time, I think it works. For me personally, I think that all comes together pretty cohesively.
I know one other thing that we kind of had on the list here was kind of the rules of, because I mean that's kind of a thing in zombie movies, is just, you know, what are the rules that we are playing with? And I think Alexander, this is one of your points too, was just that they characters don't always follow the rules according to you.
Yeah, so it felt like there were some internal rules set up by the characters when we first meet Selena and Mark. It's like, you don't go out at night, you don't go unless you absolutely have to, you don't travel anywhere by yourself unless you absolutely have to. But also some things that were not stated necessarily, but you saw visually, the fact that when we first meet them, they have protective gear like everywhere. Their arms are covered, their faces are covered, their eyes are covered. When we first meet Frank, he's in full fucking riot gear. And that stuff is thrown out the window almost immediately as a way, I think, to create tension. We've got to put them in situations where they might get hurt or they might not survive something. And it's like, but if this is something that they've adopted to survive, why wouldn't you continue doing that? Similarly, the whole don't go out at night, they come out in the dark, they're going through dark tunnels, they're traveling at night when it's like they went camping. They went camping. Like, you know that there's fucking whatever we're calling this apocalypse going on, where the creatures come out at night, they're attracted to light, and you set up a fucking bonfire or whatever, and you camp out in the middle of the, what, I don't know what it was, horse pasture? Who does that?
Yes. Katie.
So as far as like the armor and stuff goes, I get that. I think there's probably a few reasons for that. I think just from a strict production, like Hollywood standpoint, the standpoint at the time was probably that audiences would have trouble connecting with these characters if they really couldn't see their faces the whole time or just see them. I don't know if that necessarily is true, but I definitely think that was the thought at the time and still is in a lot of ways. But I found myself thinking as I was watching, like if I were in that situation, I feel like there comes a point where you kind of have to choose between speed and ease of movement versus being completely covered and protected, which could potentially slow you down or make it difficult to see or breathe or move fast. So I think at one point they're just trying to get out as fast as they can, and they kind of just abandon the super extra armor because they just are like, whatever, we'll just be fast. As far as like camping and whatnot, I don't know. I wish I could remember if they, if there was a specific line about it or anything, but I get the feeling that, that Frank knows the area very well and seems to have a notion that the infected have not made it out that far out into the country just yet. But it also looks like he stays up most of the night and guards them. So I think at the very least they remained, optimistically cautious.
Casey.
Yeah, for me, the characters constantly breaking the rules was just another example of this movie being like a little too real right now, because all we're asking people to do is wear a freaking mask and stay home, and they won't do either of those things. And so I think that, you know, even something as visual and visceral and horrible as this version of a virus is like not enough to change people's behavior. And it just, yeah, I think that's why we all got into a little bit of existential dread watching this one.
Katie.
I just wanted to add, I just remembered regarding like them choosing to travel through the tunnel, despite, you know, saying earlier that they wanted to, you know, don't travel at night, don't travel alone, blah, blah, blah. So Frank's driving the car, and when they go through the tunnel, like Jim just keeps saying, what a great fucking idea this is. Like, this is so stupid. Why are we doing this? So I think, so it is Selena who establishes early on, like, hey, don't travel at night, don't travel alone. But now they're with new people, and Frank is clearly, as the oldest person and kind of the dad of the group, they're kind of just following his lead at that point, even if they might not, fully, even if they wouldn't have done that had they been on their own.
Okay. The one thing I have left is something I added to the list. I have characters. Are there any characters we need to talk about? We got Jim, we got Mark, Selena, Frank, Hannah, the military guy, Casey.
Yeah. I think that there's a little bit too much try hard to get a romantic subplot into this movie. And the only way to do it is to make Selena just completely go back on everything that she believes and knows to be true. And it happens a little too quickly, in my opinion. And so I was disappointed because I liked the way her character started as this kind of like badass, take no prisoners, like, we got to do what we got to do to survive, to like one road trip and suddenly I'm in love with this person I've known for like 4 days. I don't know. It just, that did not work for me. And it was really disappointing because I really liked the idea that the like crass, ruthless member of the crew would be a woman.
Mm-hmm. Katie.
So I agree that their romance kind of blossoms pretty quickly. I thought that too as I was watching, but then I thought a little bit more about the context of the situation that they're in. And I think even the most like stoic, like total badass, like take no prisoners kind of person, is still ultimately human. And I think humans in crisis behave irrationally, even if they themselves are normally rational people. So I don't think they're necessarily like in love the way that two people in just like a normal situation might fall in love and be in love. I think it's more that, I mean, it's probably just like some surface level physical attraction paired
bonded by trauma, maybe.
Yes. Trauma bonding and proximity. And it's one of those things where you're just like, well, the world is ending. Fuck it. Like, I want to make out with this guy. So that doesn't really bother me as much. And I don't think that they put that in there enough. Like, I don't think it's too heavy-handed. I think it's peppered in enough that you see that they have a connection. And by the end, I mean, by the end, it really does feel like trauma bonding. Like, they are just clinging to each other for any semblance of, like, endorphins or serotonin. So I don't have as big of a gripe with that, personally.
Yeah. Alexandra.
Yeah, I just made a note as you guys were talking, hormones versus love, because that's what it is. I think it's just simply like,
yes,
I need to get laid, or just holy shit, I just need an outlet for my emotions right now. My issue when it comes to characters, is what evidence did we have at any point in the movie that Jim is any sort of a badass that he's going to go all commando and storm the mansion? Right? Bike courier. Nothing about his story says anything about the fact that he'd have any skill set to do that. Not to mention, how does he know that it's safe to unleash a chained up zombie into that mansion and the girls are going to be fine? He's going to be fine. They're only going to take out the military. It seems like the stupidest plan to save somebody, personally. Okay. You don't know that the military isn't going to turn around and go and accidentally shoot the women or accidentally shoot Jim or purposefully kill them because they're angry or just, fuck it, let's kill everybody as revenge.
I mean, yeah, but what else was he going to do? I think it was kind of more desperation. Like, I don't think that Jim was like this badass like secret Rambo who was like activated and came to life. I think he's probably just like a normal person who has reached his limit, and the only two people in the world who are still alive that he knows of that he cares about are potentially about to be taken prisoner to be sex slaves to the military guys who are supposed to save them. So to say that this might be a boiling point for him is a bit of an understatement. And I think he just goes full, like, fuck it. Like, you know, either we're all going to get killed by this zombie or I'm going to go in and save them and we're just going to get the fuck out of here. And I think it makes sense. I think we see, because if I recall correctly, Jim only actually kills two of those soldiers, and one of them is more just like the guy runs into the bayonet that, or the gun that he was holding up, but the other one is like just pure like violent animal rage to the point that Selena thinks that he's one of the infected. So I think that's the kind of thing that comes from somebody who's reached their limit of desperation and is just acting out of pure like rage and survival, as opposed to someone who's like this total apocalyptic badass who's like here to save the day.
Mm-hmm. Alexandra?
And that goes back to what Casey was saying earlier about the message of man is the ultimate evil. Man is the ultimate monster. It's like, look, he behaves just like them, but he wasn't infected. And that, to me, the way he kills the guy, I understand that base rage. You know, you're trying to protect people who you think can't protect themselves or maybe actually can't protect themselves. It was just too on the nose for me. It was just too kind of like, look, we're all evil people, even without being infected.
That's fair.
Well, we've about reached time to unmask everybody. So let's go around. We'll talk about how we really feel. Katie, we'll start with you.
It will surprise no one that I absolutely love this movie. And I always have. Yep. And it just gets better with every rewatch for me. Like I watched it when I was probably too young to watch it. And that's what I was kind of speaking to earlier, where like all of that in the middle of the movie, kind of really human, kind of touching moments, I totally just forgot about. And I was just like, yeah, the zombies, they just like fuck shit up and it's awesome. But as I've gotten older and watched it again, it really has developed more of a meaning to me. And I feel like I was actually like tearing up during some moments watching it last night because it was just so gut-wrenching and like awful. And I don't know, I think maybe that's just something that happens as you get older and come to terms with mortality, and when you see it on screen it's even more upsetting. Not to get depressing, but that's just the reality. And so yeah, I love this movie.
Wow.
Oh brother, way to send us out, Katie. Jeez.
Sorry.
Casey.
Yeah, I actually like this movie quite a bit. I do take issue with some of the sound design and all of that, because I remember even wanting to watch this with my brothers somewhat recently and ultimately choosing not to because I didn't feel like having that fight between them and my parents about the volume level. But I think overall it's a very good movie. It's fun, one of the best horror sequels, and it just fits into that time so well, and the fact that it fits into this time is just a testament to how good of a movie it really is. So yeah, I enjoyed it, and I love Cillian Murphy as the leading man. I love that he's
amazing,
kind of an off-kilter choice, and kind of a like pretty boy. I think that works really well in that ending.
Alexandra.
I am actually a really big fan of this movie also.
Nice.
I don't honestly remember the circumstances when I first saw it, but I thought it was a really well-made human drama. Whether it's a horror movie or not, that's kind of irrelevant to me as a viewer. And when you're talking about a survival story, it doesn't matter what causes the need to survive. It's just this, I think, really well-blended movie of tense moments and human moments. It's, yes, as Casey was saying, there are some issues with the way it was made, but ultimately, I just think it's a really well-crafted film in terms of the characters and showing the lengths that you go to and the need to not give up, even when things feel hopeless. And, you know, I also really appreciate Cillian Murphy. I will watch him in anything. and the fact is that this guy, the guy who wrote the movie, wrote two of my favorite science fiction movies, so I can't hate it.
Wow.
Which ones?
Yeah.
He wrote Ex Machina, and he
right, Alex Garland. Show. That's right.
Done. Say less. That's enough.
Wait, what was the other one?
Never Let Me Go.
Oh, didn't he do Sunshine also, or was that just also directed by Danny Boyle?
I think he did that one also.
He also wrote.
Oh. That's a really good sci-fi movie. Also,
he also wrote the book version of The Beach.
Oh.
Well, Kwesi, what do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean it's a fantastic movie, even as triggering as it may be right now. It's incredible. I think there are interesting points made about the, you know, the human rage aspect of things at the end, of whether or not, like, that's the main point of the story, is that the rage of humans and the things that exist within us already are as dangerous as the things that are maybe that are out there. I don't know if you guys watched the new Twilight Zone that came out recently, but they have this episode called Not All Men, wherein there's a disease, like a alien element that comes to the Earth, and it infects all the men of a small town, and they start acting out in this rage, and then some of them are like, oh no, not all of us, and it's kind of like speaking on this new, on like how all men are kind of trash moment. I see that a lot in what's happening here. And I see how powerful that was, and I think that it is a fantastic movie. I think that making it feel dirty and gross and shot in a way that didn't, because they could have made this thing very aesthetic, and I think it was a good choice not to. I think it made it feel that much grosser, and you're in it, and like all the shots are really close, and people's teeth are nasty, and yeah, it was great.
Wow, this was the first time I watched this movie. And I also really liked it. I mean, I'm a Danny Boyle fan anyways. I loved like the ebb and flow between like the really tense stuff and then, oh, look, horses. And then, oh, they're doing groceries. And like, I don't know. I thought that was like very kind of, I don't know, we're living through a pandemic right now. And that is kind of what it feels like. Where like you'll have these moments of like, wow, everything fucking sucks, and then you'll go find something else to do, and you're just like, wow, I'm having a good time, yay. And so I don't know, that really like got me when I was watching this. And I thought that it was like, I think that a lot of times when people are making zombie movies, you know, they're hitting it with the blunt zombie stick, right? They're like, we're making a zombie movie. But I think that Danny Boyle knows what he's doing, in that like it's more nuanced than that. And like, even we were talking about like, is it an infection movie? Is it a zombie movie? Like, where's the overlap? Is this like really a horror movie, or is it kind of something else? And I think that when you have a movie with layers, that's kind of the conversation you start to have. Is, you know, what it's definitely trying to say more than just like, oh, there's zombies, look at them go. And so, I don't know, I really liked it. I want to rewatch it at some point.
You should watch the sequel.
I should.
Yeah.
The sequel's also good. It's very different, but it's also good.
And it's got Jeremy Renner.
And Rose Byrne.
Oh, you lost me with Jeremy Renner, but brought me right back with Rose Byrne. but yeah, anyways, that's what I have to say about that. And everybody, that'll do it for our 28 Days Later episode, 24 Flames Per Second. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to keep talking on the extended play, which is our post show just for our Patreon folks. So if you want to get in on that and a bunch of other good stuff over there on our Patreon, head to patreon.com/24flamespod. And if you got thoughts about 28 Days Later, man, there's a lot of numbers I'm saying. you can email us at 24flamespod@gmail.com and find us on social media at 24flamespod. Wherever you listen to podcasts, go and leave a rating, review, subscribe so that you can come back next week when we close out this year's month of October horror with Coco, you know, a really fucking scary movie, Coco. but yeah, everybody, that's what's coming up next week. And yeah, thanks so much for listening. This episode of 24 Flames Per Second, produced and hosted by me, Robert Spiewak, co-hosted by Kwesi Phillips. Panels this week, the roasters were Alexander Calero and Casey Rom, and the defense was Katie Bennett. Our show music was composed and performed by Rob Joins and Will Paulson, and our network, Party Fish Media, also a podcast co-op, produced by Kwesi Phillips, Will Paulson, and me. And so, yeah, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in as we continue through October, and stay frosty out there, everybody. Take it easy as much as you can. Find your pasture full of horses when you can. Yeah, we'll catch you next week for Coco, everybody. Bye-bye!
Bye!
Bye.
Media. Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.